Welcome of the Killer Frogs Frog Fever Big 12 Basketball Podcast. Thanks for coming back and listening to another one. My name is Davis Wilson. My co-host Nick Germani is with me as always, and we've got a pretty good episode for you. We have a guest, JD Andreas from KillerFrogs.com, a colleague of ours, comes on later in the pod to talk TCU, all TCU. TCU Kansas, TCU Oklahoma, TCU Houston, all that good stuff. And we've got some takes. We fire off some fun Kansas stuff. If you have not been living under a rock, you know what happened in the TCU Kansas game. And if you have been living under a rock, wait a couple of minutes and Nick, JD, and I talk about it. But now, before we get into that, we're going to do our Big 12 segment. And Nick, where should we start with the Big 12?
I mean, the first weekend was awesome, I'll say that. We get into Kansas stuff and we get mad later on in the show, but I mean, the first week of conference college basketball is back, and it was cool to see some actual things happen, some overreactions that we can get to, and just everything that came of it. We can do a segment here that I thought would be kind of fun, which is buy or sell, like overreactions that we had from the first day. So, the first one that I thought is Houston the best team in college basketball? I mean, they took down West Virginia, which we know is bad and the worst team, but they're undefeated, the only undefeated team in all of college basketball left after week one in conference play. And they put a beating on West Virginia, 89 to 55. What do you think?
So this is interesting because as we're recording this podcast, Houston is losing by 10 at halftime to Iowa State at Iowa State. But I'm going to buy this. I think they are the best team in basketball. It's hard to go undefeated, especially when you play in the Big 12. Iowa State's a tough place to play, and it really wouldn't shock me to see them come back and win easily, but I guess we'll see tonight. I'm going to buy that take. I think Houston is the best team in college basketball, and until another team beats them, until they start to show that they stink, I'm buying that take.
Yeah, I'm gonna buy it too, actually. I've been kind of on this train for a little bit now, and I would have completely bought it if we weren't sitting at them down 10 to Iowa State at half. So, but I was gonna go in and say buy from the start, so I'm gonna stick with it. I mean, they're one in both KenPom and Net, which is the two biggest rankings to see how good an actual team is. They haven't really struggled with any team. And then once they got into conference play, I mean, their introduction to the Big 12, they put a whomping on West Va. You know, they beat A&M, they beat Xavier, they beat Utah, they beat Dayton. They passed every test so easily. Kelvin Sampson is one of the best coaches in the country. If you gave Kelvin Sampson, like some mid-major team's roster, I feel like he could make them into like a top defensive team. That's how he kind of constructs his guys. It's just being like hard-nosed, gritty guys who aren't the most talented, but they just find a way to get it done. Like that defense and the pace, when you have that good of a defense, you play at such a slow pace, it can really confuse teams. Like, the only way to beat them is to speed them up and make them uncomfortable, but that's so tough to do because they do it so efficiently. We'll see if they come back to Iowa State. And Iowa State beating them at their pace right now because they're just missing shots. Again, we'll see if they come back. But I will stick with the take that Houston is the best team in the nation. I think if they lose to Iowa State, it would be Purdue. And I think after those two, it's a pretty big gap between the rest of the country.
Yeah, I like that. And it's interesting, Houston has a pretty favorable start to the Big 12, actually. You mentioned they absolutely put it on West Virginia. They're losing to Iowa State right now, but then they get TCU, who we'll find out more about TCU tomorrow when they play Oklahoma. And then they get Texas Tech and UCF. And then they go on the road to BYU. That's kind of their first really massive opponent rankings wise that they get, at least right now. So they have a chance to kind of, and we're obviously, this is all this is all contingent on what happens tonight, but they kind of get a favorable start to their first year in the conference. So I'm excited to see what they do. I wouldn't be shocked at all if they come back and beat Iowa State. But we'll see. We'll see.
The second take I had, buy or sell, was BYU was overhyped and will struggle in the Big 12.
Ooh, that's interesting. I
They
think.
got a good intro, which they didn't even play a former Big 12 team, but they lost by double digits to Cincy at home, which is a game they probably should have won
Yeah,
being that
absolutely.
hyped up.
I think they are. I think I'm gonna split this up. I think I will buy the fact that they're overhyped, but I don't think they're gonna struggle. It depends on what you categorize as struggling in the Big 12, because no team is gonna go through the Big 12 unscathed. I think they are a little bit overrated just because of the start that they had, and it's hard to know what they're gonna do because Cincinnati is not even close to the best team you'll see in the Big 12. But I don't think they're gonna really. I mean, I could see a world where they struggle, but I think that's a good team. I think Mark Pope is a good coach. I don't think they're gonna like fall off the face of the earth in Big 12 play, but I think right now, maybe they are slightly overrated.
Yeah, I'm gonna sell it for the most part. I do think they're a really good team, which is why I'm selling it. But I mean, as you said, it's so tough to win in the Big 12. What I think is gonna happen, so they play at Baylor tonight, which is Baylor's first big time game in their new arena. So that place is gonna be loud. I think what's gonna happen is they're gonna lose to Baylor tonight, which I could be wrong because this podcast is going to come out after the results. But and then teams are really starting to think that they're just not good, that they're just coming in, and then they're probably going to sneak some teams. Like after their game against Baylor tonight, they go at UCF, which is a very winnable game. They're home against Iowa State, which is tough, but it's also winnable. And then they go at Texas Tech, which Tech's like every team's a great team, but that's also a winnable game for them. So I think if they rattle off some wins after the Baylor game, they'll get back on the map and be like that sneaky good team where they don't have to live up to the hype that they had. Like we lived at a time where they were number one in the net and they were number two in KenPom, or maybe they were two in the net, but it was
No,
something
they were one in
crazy.
week one, they were one in net.
Yeah, which is still the funniest thing to this
Was
day.
wild, yeah.
Yeah. So BYU is not number the number one team in the nation, but I do think they're still a good team. They're successful. Also, shout out Trevin Nell, who's he hit 9 threes in that opening game against Cincy, which is insane. Which brought back Jimmer vibes. Just another like cold ass white boy just hitting threes for BYU. So that's why it's fun to see white guys succeed at BYU. It's
Yeah, it is fun. It is fun. You can
just it
count on
brings
it.
you back.
You can, yeah. Yeah. All right, what do you have next?
Yeah, my last overreaction that I had was buy or sell, Texas will not make the tournament.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I'm curious to know what you think, but there's a tweet I had pulled up. Here, why don't you go? I'm gonna find this tweet and then I'll go.
I'll probably sell that. I think they're just too talented to miss it. But I do think like that loss at home to Tech should not have happened. You know, they lost by double digits to Tech at home, which is a bad opening to their conference season. And they were healthy in that game too, so you can't really play that card again. I think they're just gonna sneak in because their talent's gonna ramp up and they're gonna sneak some wins, and if you finish like 500 in the Big 12, you're gonna get in. But I do believe it's gonna be close, and it might come down to like their Big 12 tournament performance or something like that, which is gonna be fun to watch because there's a lot of Big 12 teams on the bubble.
Yeah, okay. I'm gonna sell that too. I think they are a tournament team, but I think they are really overrated right now. And the tweet I had, so they managed to stay in the top 25 even after losing to Tech.
Crazy.
So there, this tweet is from Reddit CFB, and it says, so Texas is not in the top 30 of any major computer rating. They're 60th or lower in all resume ratings. They're 0-3 against KenPom top 80 teams. And honestly, right now they don't have the resume to be in my opinion. But I am ca I believe that they will get a couple wins. And the great thing about the stacked Big 12 is that you have so many opportunities to get those resume building wins. If the season ended today, they wouldn't be in my opinion, but I think they are a talented enough team to get in. They have so many opportunities to make up for kind of a silly loss like that. So I will sell that as well.
God, I mean, after reading that, I think Reddit CFB might have swayed me. I think I'm gonna buy that they're not gonna make the tournament.
All right.
I
I
just
like that.
flip-flopped right on the spot.
I like
But
the hot takes though. I
yeah,
love
it just gives me another reason to hate Texas, so
it.
I'll be on the road.
Oh, I like that. It's right now it is a concern. And if Texas doesn't make the tournament, I guarantee you there are some conversations about Rodney Terry going on in
For
Austin.
sure, for sure.
Absolutely. And then that comes with all the recruiting that they've done. This could, I don't know. We don't need to go far that far in the future, but if Texas doesn't make the tournament, there are things that could happen that would not be good. So we'll
It
see.
is crazy how they're still ranked. Like, I don't
Yeah.
know what Rodney Terry is bribing the AP voters, but I mean, currently as we speak, they're playing Cincinnati, which and they're tied with 15 minutes left to go in the second half. If they lose to Cincinnati, then the red flags start going off, and I think it's panic mode at that point.
So KenPom has Texas at 39th, so not even close to the top 25. So what the voters were thinking, I don't know. I feel like you and me should vote with some of the people who are voting. They
Yeah, I'll
just
get on
vote
that board.
for the hell of it, I don't know. But that's interesting. I have one I just thought of. If you want to do one more.
Go for it.
So with all the Cincinnati stuff you just mentioned, they're beating Texas. They beat BYU. All right, is it time to look, I'll preface this by saying I know they're not a top team in the Big 12, but is this a I'll go the other way with Cincinnati. Is Cincinnati a tournament team?
I'm gonna buy that all the way.
Yeah.
Right now, I saw them in most bracketologies as like, on the bubble, as you said, just like so many other Big 12 teams. But so far, I mean, beating that BYU team who was so hyped up and I still
On
think
the
is
road
good.
too. That's a great
Yes.
place to get a win.
And Provo, I mean, packs that place with students or not, they're always going to show up. And they're playing Texas tough right now. I think who knows how they'll continue with the gauntlet of the Big 12, but I think they're good enough where they can make it.
Yeah. I'm gonna buy that too. I like Cincinnati. We didn't really expect too much out of them, but they just have like a evenly like they have so many guys that like let me see like they don't even really have like one scorer. Victor L Laken is at 14 a game, and that's and then it, Dan Skillings Jr. is at 11 a game, and then it's just a bunch of dudes in between like 7 and 10 points a game. So I just love how it's team ball, and I don't know, I like him. I am gonna buy that too. I think that they are adjusting really well to their. I mean, we have a long way to go, but so far they've adjusted well to their first year in the conference. So, and Cincinnati being good at basketball is always fun. So I'm hoping they are back.
Yeah, shout out Cincinnati or shout out Victor Lakin too. Like,
Yeah.
oh, in the game, in the Cincinnati BYU game, he has such a big impact because there's not that many great bigs in the Big 12. Like, obviously, you have your Hunter Dickinson and there's bigs here or there, but I feel like there's a lot of guards that dominate these teams, like your Baylors, your BYUs, your, you can go on and on your Houstons. But Victor Lakin, he kind of has the same game as like I resonated with like a PJ Hall against TCU, where he kind of set the pace, has control, is great on the boards, is efficient. Like I think he's kind of their rock inside, and they go as he goes. And to look at Cincinnati's resume, like if the season ended right now, they're for sure in. Their only losses are to Xavier and Dayton, which aren't bad losses at all. And we were waiting for them to have that signature win, as we talked about them before, because they had that good record, but they just hadn't beat anybody. But they just got the signature win at BYU so far. And if they can hold on to Texas, I think they're probably off the bubble for the meantime.
Yeah, that's a great win. That's such a good win to go to BYU, because that's one of the I mean that's one of the tougher places to play in the whole country. So getting a win there in your first Big 12 game ever is pretty cool. And it'll be interesting to see them play some Big 12 teams that have been in the Big 12, and they're doing that right now, and they're hanging with Texas. So we may have a lot to talk about with Cincinnati next week, depending on how they take care of their next couple teams. And they have let me
They got
see.
Baylor, I think, Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, they got Baylor in Waco on Saturday. And then next week they host TCU. So we'll talk a lot about Cincinnati coming
For
up.
sure.
But
Yeah. That'll be interesting. You want to start previewing some of these games this
Let's do it.
weekend? All right, so I don't know. I kind of threw down like my top three games. If you want to look at it,
I see him. Yep.
my top game was OU at Kansas on Saturday, which we know what it's like playing at Kansas.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck of you.
It's funny because they are that same type of team because they can compete, and we could see, some screenshot arguing on Twitter for a game like that and bring all that back. But I could see a similar result, I think. That game's going to be super interesting because I do think that Kansas isn't that great, so it's a winnable game for OU. I hope we can sneak them. We talk about that in our preview for OU coming up, OU TCU. I think we could kind of sneak them because I could be looking ahead to that, and that's probably the biggest game of the weekend. Two top nine teams going in such a historic place like Allen Fieldhouse. So that's going to be super interesting to see. If they bounce back from the TCU loss or if they beat TCU and just run into Kansas, it's gonna be the game of the week.
Yeah, I agree. So my question is, who are you putting on Dickinson? Because that's kind of what you need to figure out, because he's
Yeah.
pretty unstoppable offensively. And I guess John Hughley the fourth is their big guy, their biggest guy, 6'10", 275, and he's having a pretty good year. I guess that's a guy you put on him.
Yeah, they kind of rotate with him and Godwin, but none of those guys are really elite, as I would say. And I do think Dickinson could have a field day. I do think Kansas wins in kind of a close one because they probably are, especially playing at home, a slightly better team, I would say. But OU's guard play and their defense is gonna, I mean, their guard play is way better than Kansas's guard play. Kansas needs to figure out who's going to step up with that Furphy, DeJuan Harris,
Juwan Harris is
Elmarco
kind of
Jackson, Nick Timberlake. All those guys seem like they're kind of interchangeable. And so you can kind of dominate a team that way. But as your point, it's their Kansas strength go at OU's weaknesses, and then OU strength go at Kansas weaknesses. So it's going to be super interesting. I do think Dickinson's just that good, like we saw at TCU, where he just edges them out in the end, but we'll see.
Here's a question. If on Saturday it's a close game in Lawrence and there's another questionable call, does Twitter, or I guess X, whatever the hell it is, does X shut down completely? What happens to the world if there's another call that screws Oklahoma out of this game? What
People are going to be
happens?
watching a lot of X videos. I'll say that they're going to be bringing it up. No,
Oh my gosh. Don't even at me
that's an
about it.
edgy joke there, but But no, the Twitter arguing will be across the board, and it's gonna be mayhem on X if something bad like that goes again.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. You might have to like ban Bill Self from Kansas or suspend him if they get a favorable call again. Maybe look into that.
We may have to storm Kansas. We may have to storm Lawrence, Kansas. Who
Yeah,
knows?
I'm down.
And me too. I'm down.
I'm
All
all
right.
in.
All right. The next one you had was BYU at Baylor, which is this evening, right?
Yeah.
So we can kind of make our guesses. And by the time that l listeners get this podcast, they'll be able to tell how good we are at guessing things. So
Yeah.
if you want to start with some takes or guesses, go for it.
I think Baylor takes this in a close one. I do think BYU is good, but I just think that they're not going to be good yet. And as I said before, I think a lot of people are going to be raining down on BYU and calling them not ready to be in the Big 12. So that's my prediction. We'll see how dumb I look.
Well, okay. Well, I'm gonna go with you. B this is BYU. So BYU played Cincinnati and lost, but this is BYU's first Big 12, like former Big 12 test. And it's one of the best tests you can get. You're at Baylor in their brand new arena, which is pretty sick looking. I think it's gonna get really loud in there, and that'll be, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how full it is because obviously st students are still on break, but that's gonna be a super tough place for BYU to go in and play, especially coming off a loss. And Baylor did go on the road and barely beat Oklahoma State, so there are questions, and maybe Oklahoma State isn't quite as bad as we give them credit for, or yeah, whatever. But I am gonna go with you. I think Baylor wins, and I think it could be close, but the experience Baylor has in the Big 12 is just, I think that's important.
Yeah, that Baylor defense is vulnerable. So if you have your guys
Very.
like Nell or Jackson Robinson or Spencer Johnson, Dallin Hall, like you can go across the board on these guard shooters that they have. So I mean, it's a winnable game for BYU for sure.
Absolutely.
But I just think Baylor's offense is a little bit, that good where they're just kind of gonna outscore them. It's gonna be a super fun game where the offense is gonna be the main point of it, but. BYU is fully healthy now. They finally got Traore back the last game, which is one of their best players. So I'm interested to see what they have to do, but Baylor just has so many guards that can kill you. So.
Yeah. It's interesting because BYU, according to KenPom, has the sixth best defense and Baylor has the fourth best offense. So it's going to be a battle of your strengths going at it. And that'll be pretty cool to see. On the flip side of that, Baylor's defense is 70th while BYU's offense is 16th or 19th. So there's an advantage there. But I'm excited to see BYU's defense try to put a stop to Baylor's offense, which is one of the best in the country.
Yeah. It's I mean right when we get down to this pod, I'm like it'll probably about to be game time, so I'm excited, super excited to watch that game and just see how good teams are.
All right. Last one. What do you got?
Last one. Well, the last one I had was Houston at Iowa State, which is right now going
Oh,
on.
yeah. Okay.
Houston's down six as we speak with 15 minutes left.
Okay.
So what do you think is gonna happen?
This is gonna make me look like a bit of an idiot probably, but I think Houston wins still. They're in a tough place to play. Iowa State's not an easy arena to go into and win, but Houston is so good. They're better than Iowa State. I think they will win this game.
I think so too. I mean, they were down big early. They might have got down to like 14-1 or 14-2 or something like that to start the game. So, I mean, Houston's already battled back so far, and usually the better teams win these close ones. So, but Iowa State's super good. So, this is going to be interesting. It was just got cut down to five.
Okay.
So, it's getting closer as we speak.
All right. So I guess I'll choose one more we can do that is on Saturday. I'm looking at the Saturday slate.
Perfect.
I guess I mean, we already talked about Baylor, but Cincinnati Baylor is pretty interesting. Cincinnati at Baylor. Also, you have Kansas State at Texas Tech, two teams that are trying to good wins. Which one of those two do you think we should talk about?
Yeah, I mean, We've done kind of a lot of, we just kind of did some Cincy and Baylor talk, which is
Yeah,
what's
let's
going
do
to be a
Kansas
great
State,
game
Texas
too.
Tech.
But yeah, we can do K-State Tech.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. These are both teams that, I mean, Texas Tech got a good win against Texas on the road.
Yeah,
They, you know,
and
good start.
K-State, yeah, K-State just blew out UCF, which is funny because we just did the power rankings last episode and we put UCF right above K-State. So
Yeah.
maybe Jerome Tang's a Frog Fever pod listener and took a put it on his whiteboard. But
I hope
that was a
so.
big statement because we were kind of riding them off and they show that they're still a good team. So
Yeah.
if K-State beats West Va tonight, then they could be in a game where they could be back if they beat Tech.
Yeah. Jerome Tang, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on.
Yeah,
Reach out to our
shout
people.
out.
Our people, get in touch with your people, we'll have you on.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good game, I think. Texas Tech. Where is that game? That's in Lubbock, so that'll be a tough game for Kansas State, but they're gonna need wins like that,
Yeah.
and that's a great opportunity for them, I guess, to get it.
And shout out Tyler Perry. He went off in that UCF game and he had been struggling a little bit before, so
Yeah,
I mean he might be back too.
maybe he's back. Maybe Kansas State's back. Probably not, but maybe.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, anything else?
No, that was a good pod.
Yeah, good pod.
Stay
We'll
on
go.
and listen to the us rant about TCU
Oh yeah, that's right.
refs.
That's right. Coming up next, we got JD Andreas on, a killerfrogs.com colleague of ours. And before we go there, let's take a break.
All right, now we got JD Andrus joining. He's another Killer Frog writer. He grew up a TCU fan, so he writes all about TCU sports, specifically football, basketball, baseball for the most part. And we had him on to talk about this TCU game. If we want to open it up with just the Kansas reaction, like, what the hell are the refs on in Allen Fieldhouse? You guys can take it away.
Well, I'll just say before we get into that, JD, thanks for coming on. Should be a fun one. We got some things to talk about. If you wanna start, just initial reaction when you know Uday gets the rebound, kind of naturally, it seems like he naturally is clearing out space. Dickinson goes down in a dramatic fashion. TCU is moving down the court. And then the play has stopped and they look at it. What is your reaction when they stop the play and then when they do call it a flagrant one?
First of all, thank you guys for having me. It's nice being on here. My reaction when it happened is, I at first I was like, all right, TCU's got a breakaway. We're going. I was like, Dickinson's on the ground, is what it is. And they stopped the play and I was like, okay, if they're gonna take a look at it, I understand it's the rules, you gotta take a look at it and you have to stop play. That is what it is. I wasn't mad about that. I was mad about the whole thing, whatever it was, rolled a flagrant foul. I mean, would you have the entire booths and everyone on social media, everything? Like, there are Tech fans and Texas fans. Like, I know everyone hates Kansas basketball, but you can't call that a flagrant. There was nothing that showed that he meant to do that on purpose. He made contact with Dickinson and then he looks behind him. It's not like he looks behind him and then throws the elbow. That's a different story. I can understand calling a flagrant there, but yeah, no, I've got no words for that, really, that one.
It was just, it's at some point, like us other schools in the Big 12 that have to go to Allen Fieldhouse and play Kansas, we should be getting used to this stuff. Like, either you go there and Kansas dominates you, or you go there and it seems like more often recently, there is a call, a massive call that alters the outcome of the game. And I don't know. I feel like at some point we should get used to that. Like, it's just the way it is for whatever reason. Because TCU played a good game. TCU played a great game, I thought.
Yeah, that's what sucks about this whole thing is that you took a great TCU outing that was encouraging for all fans and just put it on a call, which for the integrity of the rule, you probably have to stop it and look at it, but that's probably more of a rule problem than it is just the actual call in the situation. Like, if you, because the fact that they didn't call the initial foul on the hook right away and stop play for a transition seems like it kind of goes against the actual play that's going on happening, because you take away a fast break from TCU. And you don't know if they are going to win off of it, but up two with under a minute left with the ball, I mean, that's a crazy call to make, to have the refs being put in that spot to kind of dictate the game. I mean, as you said, this is a thing where, like, 8-on-5, all, you know, whatever they're smoking up there in Allen Fieldhouse, they got the refs doing something for them. But, I mean, it's such a yeah, as you said, it doesn't feel that wrong because it happens all the time. But to waste such a good TCU outing, and then additionally after the flagrant on the Dickinson pretty much travel, I mean, you can play the screenshot battle all day by, you know, saying the push and all that kind of stuff. But to have both those calls not go your way, I mean, it feels like you're robbed as a TCU fan.
I think that's the major takeaway, is no one's coming out of that game saying that was the Travion Tennyson show up game. Like, he's here. Everyone's talking about the bad call at the end and then potentially the missed call with Dickinson, depending how much you want to get into the specifics about that one. Like, no one's taking what TCU did and what TCU showed that game, and it's all about the call. And I think, yeah, I mean, even I do it. It's like, you know, I would to a family event after the game, they were like, that game, like, that call was awful, and like, that was all we talked about. No one talked about the performance of the players or anything else. It was just, wow, the refs, like, that's Kansas for you. So I think that's something that isn't talked about, and I'm glad that, like, people are talking about it now after the game, is, hey, you know what, the TCU showed up, and if they can keep doing that all year, it's good to go.
The other thing is, it was such a great game, not really just for TCU, but like the back and forth between TCU and Kansas was awesome all night and or all day. And it feels like you really don't look at like you don't. That's not what we remember now. And it's unfortunate even for the Kansas guys. Like they played a good game. Hunter had 30 and 11. You know, KJ Adams had 18 and 10. Like they had some dudes who had awesome games. And that's, you're not even really talking about that because of, like, once again, it's just this call that completely alters the outcome of a game, and it seems to always go in Kansas' favor. And I don't want to, we don't have to sit around on this podcast and complain about the refs all day, but like, it was pretty bad. And I don't know, it's unfortunate because that was the best TCU's looked all year, in my opinion. And it's just unfortunate that the refs are continuing to dictate outcomes of games like that.
Yeah, I think it's a problem with the way, as I said, like, the NCAA goes about, because like, the rule is there that you do have to look at that regardless. And I still think after you look at it, like, Uday didn't have any intent with that elbow. I mean, he's just going for the ball in that scenario. But when you're TCU in the situation, you're a bubble team that needs every win you can get. And this season has been so slow for the most part because you haven't gotten that signature win. And to kind of taste that and just it fall out, knowing that you could have had such a big boost on your resume that pushes you ahead of the bubble. Like, I mean, if you went at Kansas as a team that was already on the bubble, you're probably being pushed to almost in a safety zone at this point. Obviously, we're early January, but just looking at where they would lie at that, I mean, it's just a heartbreaker for TCU. And hopefully there's something that they can bottle up and use as aggression for next game. But I mean, that's such an emotional roller coaster that you have, you know, the Trey Tennyson game of a life. You know, Eman played well, a lot of guys played well, Jameer played well, and you let it go. And that being said, like, if you're Kansas, I don't even know if you're feeling good about this. Like, Kansas is probably the worst 13-1 team. Like, they seem to have slipped by so many times this year. Like, I feel like they aren't even, if you're looking at that side of the ball, like, not even at a national championship level right now. They have so many issues to figure out. Like, their guard play is insanely worrisome. They got insane games from Dickinson, KJ, and McCuller, and didn't, you know, needed a ref call to beat TCU. I don't know. It's just, It was such a weird game that was so back and forth, and everybody's looking at the call or calls nowadays, which is, like you said, not what it should have been.
Go ahead.
That was that TC or the call on Uday. Like, there was not enough to overturn that. Like, I can understand if it was a clear as day, you can overturn it. But in a game that close, I know it's referee discretion. In a game that close, you shouldn't call that. With the call, like, I can understand both sides of the argument. Like, I've seen the replay now that, 5 days later after the game, and I'm like, all right, you know what? I can see why they would think that. But in a game that close, that should just be something the referees are taught. Hey, you can't call something like that. That was a 6-point swing play. Like, let the guys battle out. There were 28 lead changes. Like, let the game decide itself. Don't let it be decided by a ref.
Yeah. We can get into some of the individual performances by TCU, because there are a lot of good ones. But what I'll say is, we all know about this insane record that Bill Self has at Kansas at home. Like, it's this amazing thing. And I feel like two things can be true. Bill Self is a great coach, and he, recruits elite talent to come and play at Kansas, and they have a great environment at home. And that's one of the reasons they went at home. But I think what can't be ignored is, and this is something that everybody around the country, except for the people in Lawrence, Kansas, can see, is that there are a lot of instances where they are getting a ton of help at home, more help than anyone in the country in that building. And I don't know. It's frustrating to be on the losing end of that again. Like, it's so unfortunate for Jamie and the guys that you play just such a good game, and Trey Tennyson, the game of his career, channeling his inner Shahada Wells in Lawrence, and it ends like that. It's just a bummer. But let's talk about Trey Tennyson, because we have not seen anything like that out of him so far. And when TCU recruited him, we knew he was the shooter, and we really hadn't seen him shoot the ball that much. But he was 6 of 8 from 3, 9 of 12 from the field, and he had 24. What were your guys' reaction to see everything he took go in?
Yeah, I mean, dude just has balls. Like, you can tell when he gets going, he's just going to pull from wherever. And he has that kind of hot stroke where you can pull from deep, and, like, the range is limitless. He was, like, the level of difficulty on the shots he was making were insane. He's got as quick a release as it comes. Like, it doesn't even go through. He almost pulls the string on it, and it still works for him. So if you have that kind of hot streak shooter that can kind of keep you in games as you go, that's going to be massive for him.
Yep.
And we've seen some of the guards not play up to what we thought. As, Jameer's probably been a little bit underperforming, and Avery's been good, but he hasn't been able to play like that steady amount of minutes. But inserting Trey into the starting lineup was a genius move from Jamie, and it's proven to be massive because it adds that extra scoring depth. And we saw teams running zone against TCU at the start of the year because they didn't have that shooting threat, or at least teams didn't think they had that shooting threat that could kill them. And it's been an Achilles heel of TCU for the last couple of years. So that transfer addition, Jamie knowing exactly what he can bring to the team, was massive, and he's just showing up. I tweeted that, it reminded me of like a Klay Thompson hot streak, when he can just go crazy, or like Steph, or when it just seems like every shot he makes or every shot he shoots is going in. And that's how it felt, and that's how it was for him. I mean, he was 6 of 8 from 3. That's massive for what the Frogs needed.
I could sit here and talk about his offensive game all day, but like you said, like, what impressed me more was, one, the amount of minutes he played. I mean, 35 minutes on the game. And it was a lot of people, I had a lot of friends who follow TCU basketball, but not close. And they were like, who is this guy? And it's like, the fact that he's getting 35 minutes a game, and what he was able to bring on the defensive side of the ball. Like, I think he had 3 steals on the game. Yep. Like, he was playing a complete game. It wasn't, he was just a shooter for the game. No, he was the best player on the court that game, minus Hunter Dickinson. And I think what he's been able to bring, especially in with Jakobi Coles being out with injury, as far as like an offensive threat, like it, besides just what we normally run with the fast break offense, I think has brought it opens up the rest of the season for what is a possibility now.
He had so he played 35 minutes against Kansas. That's his highest minute total of the year. He played 34 against Hawaii, and as far as I can tell, that's as many as he's played. And he had not cracked. He scored 13 points in the first game of the season against Southern, and didn't score over that until he goes into Allen Fieldhouse and doesn't miss really, and scores 24 points. So, especially for a team that, Nick and I have talked a lot about how the guards are still, we have questions about them. We thought Jameer was going to be this guy who comes in and scores. He hasn't gotten there yet. Avery has been pretty reliable all year, but we were wondering where the scoring was going to come from outside of Emmanuel Miller. And who knows if this is going to be something that can be sustained, but to see him do that, just be that flamethrower type of guy that TCU really hasn't had since like Desmond Bane. It's pretty cool to see a guy that can shoot the skin off the ball like that. And against Kansas, at Kansas too, just makes it so special. The other guy that I was pretty impressed by was Avery Anderson. He had six steals, right? I mean, I think I saw that he had six steals, which is just crazy.
They had 16 as a team. Six, I think it
That's
was like 16 to 6 was the steal.
Yeah, they got Kansas to play at their pace, which is kind of cool.
So they're the so now they're the we've talked about this a lot too, but they're fifth in the country when it comes to steal percentage defensively because of these guards that they have, like Jameer and Trey now getting steals, Avery Anderson, six steals. So that's really encouraging to me because when you want to play fast like TCU does, creating turnovers and getting rebounds, which we'll talk about rebounds, but creating turnovers is essential, and they did a, you said they had 16. They did a really good job of that.
Yeah, I thought all the guards played well. Like Jameer hit some late shots or hit some big shots late, and he was 5 of 6 from two. Obviously, he missed the last shot, but that's just a heave at the end. Avery, like you said, and Trey and Micah played well too. So all the guards showed up. I mean, as we said, it was a really good, performance from the guards. I'm interested to see, as we talked about Jacoby being out, do you think if Jacoby would have played, then TC would have won this game?
I think it probably would have been about the same. I mean, you're assuming he probably would have came in for Trey to begin with, and you're assuming both of them would have a big enough game like that. I think you're looking right around the same box score, maybe a little bit less threes, but around the same amount of points overall.
Yeah, it's hard to know because Jacoby had such a great start to the year, but the last couple games, he hadn't been that same guy when it comes to scoring. He's doing other stuff well, but scoring, it's hard to know. I think obviously it would have helped. Like he's a great player, he's an experienced player. He's been there and he's won there before. But it's hard to know. Maybe he would have had one of those games where he went off and, really provided something for TCU. He probably would have helped in the rebounding, which is kind of what I was most concerned about when I look at this game. Kansas out rebounded TCU 40-28, and I feel like so they yeah they had 16 of those 40 were offensive rebounds, and it felt like more than that, honestly. It was in a lot of area in a lot of spots it killed TCU when they just gave up those offensive boards and those second chance points. What did you guys think of the rebounding issues, and maybe how do you fix that going forward?
After that A&M Commerce game when Uday went crazy, you would hope that he would have more than 4 rebounds or whatever he had. And we saw Jamie really kind of lean away from playing a lot of X or Esom. So he saw, I think, how pace was benefiting them. So even last game, we saw it with Jacoby out, he would kind of play Cork at the four and with Esom or with Uday to go big. But we didn't really see them go into that, which would have been kind of interesting to see if they could neutralize Hunter more or KJ more because they were getting beat down low so big, as you said, with rebounds. I would hope that you could kind of stick with Uday, I think, more because he is that only really big guy you have, and he's had so much potential. And he showed flashes there, but you just point blank, I know Dickinson's really good, and I know KJ is really good, so it's going to be tough to out rebound Kansas, but you can't get out rebounded by 12 and hope to get a win.
Especially in Kansas. It's just not something you can
I
get away
think
from.
that I think that's one of those things where like Jamie just kind of realized, you know what? We can keep pace with this team by just sacrificing the rebounds and just playing our fast-paced offense. I mean, Uday only had 20 minutes on the game, and there were a lot of times that like I'd look up and I was just surprised that he wasn't on the floor, especially with the rebounding issues that TC was having. And it was like eventually I think you just kind of saw Jamie just leaned into, hey, you know what? We're faster than them and we're just gonna play our style of game. And to Jamie's credit, it worked. Like it kept the game that close. And I think if, especially against a team with a dominant big like such as Kansas with Dickinson, I think we might see more of this here, the rest of the season coming up. It's just let's just play our style. If they out rebound us, they out rebound us. We just got to make our shots and hope that it gives the game.
I like that. The encouraging part, another one of the encouraging things about this was that, Nick, you mentioned that TCU was able to make Kansas play how TCU wanted to play. And that was something we were concerned about because Kansas has a great defense that really excels in slowing their teams down. Like their average possession length on defense is 17.8 seconds, I guess, on KenPom, which is 283rd in the country, which would be that would be good. That would not, it's hard to explain, but it's 283rd from like least amount of time to most. So they slow their opponent down. And so I thought it was encouraging that TCU was able to get out and run. And that makes me think that if they can do that to a team like Kansas, they can do that to some of these other teams in the Big 12 that are going to want to slow them down.
Yeah, that's the key. I mean, that's going to be the key, especially when you play a lot of these teams that move slower, like, you know, a Houston plays at a slow pace, or a lot of different teams play at that slower pace, where that's going to be the key to get teams to play at their pace. I mean, that's so big in college basketball, is keeping teams the way you want to play. But even regardless, I thought that the half court offense was much improved against Kansas than what we've seen before against Nevada or Clemson. So that's super encouraging. And when Jacoby comes back, he's probably one of the best half court players on their team because he plays at that slower pace that can benefit from it. So that sign was really encouraging. You know, obviously they lost this game and it was at Allen Fieldhouse, so that's super tough. But there's so many things that you can take away from that they were amazing at. Like that offensive performance was really good. Putting up 81 on those efficient numbers were massive. And you're gonna rebound better against other teams. So I think there's a lot of benefits to take away from this TCU game. And I think going forward, hopefully this carries over and you could snag an upset here or there against these top tier teams and you don't have to be that fearful of the Big 12 schedule.
TCU was only the second team all year to put up 80 points on Kansas. The other was Kentucky, who has a top eight offense in the country, according to KenPom. So, like, it's tough to score on Kansas, and TCU did at a an efficient level, and only two teams scored 80 on them. That's Kentucky and TCU, and only one team scored or two teams scored 70 on them. So I think that speaks to just how impressive that offense was. And it was a nice mixture of fast paced get up and down and score, and also we saw some encouraging signs in the half court offense.
Yeah, I think a bigger question will just be, was that a one-off game from the offensive performance, or is that going to be what we can expect to see? Like, obviously, when you're going to Allen Fieldhouse and you're playing Kansas, like, you're going to be pumped up an extra level. Like, but is that, was that, that's why I'm, you know, I think it's, if we see that the rest of the way, I'm happy with whatever happens. But, you know, it's, I kind of want to see where they're at.
So on that note, tomorrow, we're recording this on Tuesday the 9th. Tomorrow, Wednesday the 10th, TCU welcomes Oklahoma to town. And Oklahoma has the 14th best defense in KenPom. So this is a test right here. You're going to have an opportunity to prove that they can do this on a nightly basis. What are you guys looking for out of the TCU offense in order to make that happen?
I think they beat Oklahoma tomorrow.
All right.
I think Jacoby's practicing today, and we could get him back. He's still questionable, but you know that OU team is coming off a big win against Iowa State, and they have a look-ahead game at Kansas. So we're kind of that trap game for them, I think. And what they do, which we thrive on, OU turns the ball over a lot, actually, or more than they should, which plays in a TCU's favor of pushing the ball and getting those steals that makes them so good. Like, OU is 228th in turnover percentage on offense, and they kind of play at a similar pace to TCU. So, I mean, if TCU forces the turnovers, get the ball out early, and if they are fully healthy, I think at home you can snag a win off an OU team. Obviously, it's super tough. Like, they're the number 9 team in the nation for a reason, but I'm confident with what I saw against Kansas, and I think they'll pull off the upset in a tough game.
No, yeah, I'm with you, Nick. I think TCU can pull this one off, especially after a heartbreaking loss like that. First home game, OU's in town. Last time you're going to play them in conference. Like, it's kind of like the makings are there for the upset, and I think they get it done. I do have a question for you guys. If Jacoby Goles comes back, whose spot is he taking out of the starting five once he gets inserted back in?
Go ahead.
Here, you can go.
No, you know more than me.
I said he was coming off the bench the last couple of games before he got hurt even. So I yeah. would still stick with that same lineup because it's been working. Ever since the Nevada loss, we've started that Avery, Trey, Micah, Eman, Uday starting lineup. So I think you just kind of roll with that, even with the loss to Kansas, because it worked. So I would just see Jacoby coming off the bench and playing minutes with Cork, Jameer, and Esom.
One thing I'd like to see, I think I agree with you guys. I think TCU has, I feel like TCU wins this game because I think they're going to be pretty, pretty pissed off. And I also think that it's just a good opportunity. The thing that worries me is Oklahoma is a good rebounding team, above average in the country. They, especially offensively, offensive rebounds, they have the 52nd best in the country when it comes to offensive rebound percentage. So I guess what do you want to see? Do we need more from Ernest Uday? Do we need, you know, Xavier? Where do these rebounds come from in order to stop these second chance opportunities?
I want to see Uday go crazy again.
Yeah.
I liked what he's had at A&M Commerce, and I hopefully he's pissed about that call last game. You know, he got in a little bit of foul trouble, I think, in the Kansas game early, where it kind of stunted his ability to have long terms on the floor. You know, he shows signs of being, I don't want to say elite, but a really good player. And if they're going to get better on the boards, Uday's going to have to be that guy. But, I mean, just team rebounding. Like, we've seen Micah be an elite rebounder at times. We've seen Eman be an elite rebounder at times. And I think any one of those guys, any one of the starters could be big. Obviously, if you get an X or an Esom game where they give you a decent amount of boards, that'll be a plus. But the main guys who are starters need to be good in that department if you want to have success.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if Uday can put together, like you said, the flashes that he's shown so far, if he can put them together against good teams, like, yeah, I mean, I know he had an off game on the Kansas game, but tough matchup is what it is. But if you can have a good game against Oklahoma and then Houston coming up, like, this TCU team's a real threat. Because, like, if you're going to give them the chance to get boards back with the offensive ability they have, like, that's a scary team to match up with in March. Like, I think I just want to see a big game from him. I don't need him to light the stat sheet up, just a better game than what we saw against Kansas.
Yeah, I think this team, I don't think anybody wants to see this team in March. I don't think any team in the country wants to see TCU just because of the way they play. It's just an intense style of play. They pressure you. They run. But looking at, I don't want to look ahead too much, but we will not be able to record a pod, I don't think, by the time the Houston game comes on Saturday. So what, I mean, right now as we record this, Houston's losing to Iowa State at Iowa State by 9. It's 29-20 with a minute 34 left in the half, and maybe Houston makes a big comeback, maybe not. But and a lot of this depends on what the team looks like against Oklahoma. But what are the chances for TCU against Houston at home?
I think it's so tough. In my opinion, I think Houston or Purdue are the best teams in the nation. So, and especially if they're coming off a loss, I mean, Kelvin Sampson's gonna have them ready. They like to keep teams in the half court. They are smart with the ball. They have a lot of experience guard play where it could kind of, outplay what TCU has to do. They're the best defensive team in the nation. I think it's gonna be real tough, and they'll probably take the L on that. I would love them to upset him and prove me wrong, but I mean, Houston's just been such a tough team. They just demolished West Virginia. I know they're losing to Iowa State right now, so there could be a little bit of, a sign that they could win. I mean, their offense isn't elite, and they don't really have that stud big man. And Terrence Arsenault is out, who's one of their best forwards, who I think might be out for the year. But Houston's just so good that TCU could drop it, but I wouldn't be discouraged if they lose that one.
No, yeah. If I think, regardless of the outcome of the game, if TCU can even get Houston to play their style of game, like we've talked about today, even for 5 minutes, 8 minutes out of the game, that's a positive sign because Houston's a very disciplined team, a great defensive team. And if you can get them to play your style for any part of the game, then that's a big win. It's something to build off of, regardless of what the final score says. Yeah, I obviously win would be big, but I mean, that's a after that the schedule lightens up enough that there's enough of the three games right there that TCU's played that it tells you a lot of what you need to know already.
Yeah, it's crazy because even like so TCU started Big 12 play obviously with Kansas, then it gets Oklahoma, then it gets Houston, which are all, I mean, those are three of the best teams in the country. And then you get like Cincinnati, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and that is a lighten up, but it's still just ridiculous. Like Cincinnati just beat BYU. Iowa State is taking it to Houston right now. It's just it's really crazy how good this conference is, and you really don't get much many breaks, which is why, you know, we don't have to go back to it. But games like Kansas, where it feels like you have a chance to win and you don't, are just unfortunate. But I'm excited to see what this team does against Oklahoma and Houston at home. I'm interested to see what the atmosphere is going to be like. I don't know, Nick, if you know if students are going to be back or not, but I'm excited to see what this team looks like and if the way they play against Kansas is sustainable throughout the year.
Yeah, I wish we didn't have this week where students are still on break, because I don't think that OU game will be as packed as it should be. And it sucks at the Cowboys games at the same time as the Houston game
Oh,
on
yeah.
Sunday or Saturday. So that might take some guys out of it. But if you split these next two, that's still a win. You get your most quality win of the year by far against the, I mean, these are two of the top nine teams in the country as AP has them right now. So whatever happened, like if you get one of those, it's a success. And you're right. I mean, there's no off days in the Big 12. So it's just a gauntlet the whole way out. I don't think you can really play that schedule game of, this is going to be a win because there's no guaranteed wins at the Big 12. And there's no guaranteed losses. Like we just saw them go into Lawrence and almost get a win. So every game is winnable and every game is losable. So it's just going to be tough. I will say in the Houston game, I mean, I'm looking at their stats. They're 306 in the nation in free throws. So you could play Hackett Cougar there and get, hope for some misses. But I mean, it's going to be super tough. I just want to get a win, one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that it's trial by fire. If TCU can make it to the big dance come in March, I mean, regardless of their seeding, if they're a dangerous team, you play in the Big 12, like you're record doesn't matter. Your stats don't really matter. You've been tested by some of the best teams in the country, and I'd be afraid to play any of the bubble Big 12 teams that are right, that make it in.
Absolutely. Well, JD, thanks for coming on, man. That was fun.
Yeah.
We would love to
Yeah,
have you back.
appreciate you, JD.
We'd love to have you back on anytime.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. This was fun. Here's to a long year of basketball, and hopefully no more other teams get screwed by the Kansas refs the rest of the year. But like, that won't happen though.
I give it 2 weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks, and Twitter's gonna go crazy again.
Yeah, they're telling
Yeah.
them to be on their best behavior right now. So
Yeah.
if you see a team take a lead in Allen Fieldhouse and you're a betting man, I would put money line on that right away. You can
Hammer
get a
the live
steal.
odds. Hammer them.
It's one of those you never even see Bill Self worry at all. It's because he's just like, all right, close enough game. The refs got me. All right, here's what it is.
Yeah.
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 He intimidates them in the locker room or something like that. Who knows
Yes.
what he's got going on?
The refs must have to walk through Kansas's locker room to get to their dressing rooms in the back or something. There has to be an explanation for it. All
Yeah.
right. Appreciate you guys having me on. This
Yeah,
was fun.
man. That was a lot of fun. Please come back
Thanks, JD.
if you want to.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for listening to another episode of the Frog Fever Killer Frogs basketball podcast, a Big 12 basketball podcast that you can find anywhere where you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, the podcast app, whatever. Whatever works for you, YouTube maybe, probably not YouTube actually, but killerfrogs.com. You can find us anywhere. Once again, my name is Davis Wilson. That is Nick Germani, and we will see you next week.